Welcome to this Nordic talk about reducing the use of chemical pesticides in agriculture in Nepal in an effective way, protecting biodiversity, farmers and consumers' health. Nordic Talks is a series of talks addressing the biggest global challenges. Through conversations with some of the brightest minds in the Nordics and their counterparts from around the world, we want to provide a space for contemplation and to share inspiration on how to act on sustainability issues in our everyday lives. Nordic Talks are dedicated to addressing the UN's Sustainable Development Goals challenges. The duration of this talk will be around 1 hour. I'm Lise Josefsen Hermann. I'm a journalist and I will be moderating this Nordic talk. Our participants today are the Nepali researcher and professor Sundar Tiwari from Agriculture and Forestry University in Bharatpur, Nepal, who has been specializing for years in biological pest control and sustainable agriculture. He dialogues with Danish Erik Jørs, a senior physician and an associate professor in occupational medicine at Odense University Hospital and University of Southern Denmark, who a large part of his working life has spent leveling global inequality in countries like Nepal, Uganda, and Bolivia, focusing on pesticide poisoning in several parts of the world. We are touching the following Sustainable Development Goals: 2, zero hunger; 12, responsible production and consumption; and 15, life on land. So let's start meeting our participants. Sundar Tiwari, could you please shortly present yourself and why you find this topic important?
Okay, thank you very much, journalist and the panelist in the session. So my name is Sundar Tiwari. I'm from Agriculture and Forestry University, Nepal. I'm the professor of entomology. I have been working in the area of the integrated pest management, basically utilizing the agroecological aspect of the pest management for the sustainable agriculture. So including I'm also working some biological pest control methods, like utilizing some biological control agent for controlling the pest, as well as some local strategy which are very, very effective for the pest management. These are the area that I have been working in the university, including I also involved in some research in Nepal, focusing on nature-based solution which get more pest management solution as a alternative measure of the pesticide. And also I'm engaging some training to the farmers through farm field school approach to the community. So we have been organizing many farmers training in the farmers field, and I'm giving as a resource person in that farmers training. This is all about me, actually. Thank you.
Thank you, Sundar. Erik Jørs, would you also please shortly present yourself and why you find this topic important, and maybe also mention something about this, how this research collaboration or this collaboration with Sundar came about in the first place?
Yes, my name is Erik Jørs. I'm a senior physician specialized in occupational medicine and environmental health. And I've been working with pesticides since 2001, where we started a collaboration with Bolivia due to a varying number of human poisonings due to pesticide. So they reached out and asked us if we could help investigating the problem and maybe find some viable solutions to avoid poisonings and also deaths due to pesticides. Later on, we started out in Uganda as well, and Nepal, and this problem with poisonings due to pesticides is a global issue, but mainly the largest number we see in low-income countries and middle-income countries. So it's highly relevant to collaborate also with Sunda in Nepal, who actually worked close together with us the first years after we started out in Nepal.
Thank you very much, Erik. Then I have a small round of a series of questions I would like to ask, start asking about how serious or worrying do you find the use of chemical pesticides worldwide? And maybe I can start asking Sander also, especially if we look into human health or the environment, biodiversity.
Actually, the today discussion is very global concern discussion, because people are facing many, many challenges in agriculture, especially using chemical pesticide. People are using high dose of pesticide. They are concentrated in the intensive agriculture. They are going to be affected our whole ecosystem, whole society, whole farming communities, including environment and biodiversity. So we have been hearing every day in news that people are affected by cancer in many parts of the Nepalese village. So that's why is a kind of is a concern of the discussion, concern of the donor organizations to focus on that area. And also we have been facing many environmental challenges, like we are losing our aquatic biodiversity. We cannot see fishes, you cannot see any aquatic animals in the river and our streams. So it's going to be zero animals in the stream as well. So we are losing our bees, because bees are very important for pollination, including some butterflies. You know, these good insect we are losing, and they are going to affect our ecosystem, is going to affect our biodiversity. So this is all about how chemical pesticide is doing in the country, especially in the developing countries, more concerned. So that's it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Sander. And what about you, Erik? Maybe you want to mention some more examples of this and the consequences for human health. You mentioned just that you were contacted regarding this poisoning, human poisoning.
It is very serious to the people who are, every time they have contaminated with chemical pesticide. Basically, the first group of affected group is the farmers, because they every time they go to the field and they has a good they have they might have contamination of the chemical pesticide, and they can face many short run, including long run pesticide effect. In short run, the people are even in the farmers, they might have some experience of the vomiting, they might have some experience of some health related issue. So it's going to be is a short run, but in long run, this pesticide contamination and everyday consumption of the pesticide is introducing their body, and that is going to be affected their whole health system, including cancer, blood cancer, breast cancer. You know, these are the some health related issue in the country in case of the farmers. Also, the pesticide dealer, they might have more exposure to the everyday the exposure with the chemical pesticide dealer also affected. Formulator who formulate the pesticide, these people are also affected, because they might have everyday contamination with the chemical pesticide. So the whole system is going to be affected. The product is already contaminated with the chemical pesticide. So the residue is there. People, they don't know which crop is more safe and which crop is not safe. So people are enforced to having the unsafe product. So that is also going their body, and that is definitely is going to be affected. I think that part will cover by Dr. Erik. Thank you.
Yes, I would like to ask you, Eric, how worrying do you see this use of chemical pesticides and the consequences, maybe especially for human health or of other farmers, when both in Nepal or in a globe on a global level?
Yeah, I mean, the use of pesticides is not only an issue for human health, it's actually planetary health that we are talking about here. Because, as Sundar mentioned, it's not only affecting the health of humans, causing deaths and poisonings, and in the long run, nervous diseases, cancer. Problems with the fertility and so on, but it's also affecting the fertility of the land and the preservation of the land where we are growing our food. So if we can't, in the long run, not grow the amounts of food we want due to problems, pesticides killing the good insects, killing the insects, maintaining the ground fertile, then we will have problems with the lower harvests and maybe starvation. But now in the short run, you can say that, I mean, we can't just swap to no use of pesticides. It'll take years because if we just swapped now, then we would lose maybe 30, 40% of our harvest, and that would indeed cause starvation, not only among humans but also for our domestic animals around the world. But talking about human health, then pesticides, they are poisonous substances, different degrees of course. And for farmers in low-income countries, the biggest problem is acute poisonings. For example, the farmer who is spraying in his field often feel headache, vomiting, breathing problems, extreme tiredness, and so on after having sprayed a whole day in the field. They know it, and they know that this is probably just a minor problem that will pass within a day or two. So they're used to it. But in the long run, these many small poisonings can cause these chronic diseases that I just mentioned. Now, around 300,000 to 400,000 people each year are killed due to pesticide poisonings. Maybe 25, 30 thousand farmers working with pesticides due to accidents are getting deadly poisoned. Most of the deadly poisons we see are due to self-harm, suicide attempts, because there are, might be regulations in most low-income countries, but they are not controlled, so you can buy whatever you want. Even the most poisonous substances in the street or in the shops. So people know that they are effective if they want to commit suicide, so they buy them and they drink them. So that is actually the biggest deadly issue for humans with pesticides. Now, the latest article I read about how many farmers are actually poisoned each year talked about maybe hundreds of millions of farmers experiencing symptoms, although minor symptoms, after having used pesticides.
Thank you, Eric. Those are really big numbers. Of course, it's worldwide also. Sander, I would like to ask you, returning more to Nepal again. How about traditional ways of farming or ways of cultivating in Nepal? Do farmers in Nepal still use more traditional ways of farming without use of chemical pesticides, or why did it change from that?
I think this is a very good question. The people, majority people, in farmers from Nepal, they are practicing the traditional farming because they do not have access of the intensive input like fertilizer, chemical pesticide in the remote site. So majority people, they are still using the traditional farming, but because of the but there is a big challenge, big the pressure of the increasing production, because the people are moving to the urban site from the rural area. So the land is going to be shrinking, and land is going to be abundant, and that so in the urban site the people are focusing on increasing the production. So in the name of the increasing the production, they are using high inputs like chemical fertilizer, chemical pesticide, high yielding varieties. And of course, that is the way the shifting is from the traditional farming to conventional farming is increasing. But of course, still the people who are living in the rural side, they are using the traditional farming. They have their own practice of pest management. They have their own practice of the cultivation, like they use a local variety. They use a mixed cropping. They use a intercropping. They use some biodiversity. They have a very good mechanism of maintaining the biodiversity. So they also use some biopesticide in local level, using many plant materials together, and they make a solution and they spray. So this is a kind of biological pest control. So this is still very common in the in many in majority communities in Nepal. But that is going to be reduced because the people are moving to the urban site for the searching the job and whatever. So the big pressure in the urban side. So that's why we are shifting from the traditional farming to conventional farming, and the rate is increasing day by day.
So actually, from the traditional way of farming, we have many good practices or good examples to follow or to remember. Maybe try not to all move away from in this rush for increasing productivity.
My experience about reducing the use of pesticides is called integrated pest management. It's a principle promoted for many years by the FAO, the Food and Agricultural Organization. And that's the principle where we teach farmers as far as possible to avoid chemicals. It's cheaper for them, and often it's not necessary to spray with pesticides. But farmers need to know, for example, if the insects in their field are beneficial or are harmful to the crops, so they don't spray the beneficial insects if there are many of them. And then they need to use, instead, they should use traditional methods, good farming practices, including selection of the best seed, how to water the plants when they are growing, and give maybe traditional manure from the cows or whatever they have. There are a lot of traditional practices that are not harmful to humans or to the environment. They also have their traditional ways of producing some kind of pesticide, you could call it. They might be poisonous to the humans, but not as poisonous as the artificial pesticides are. Then, when farmers take their products to the market, there are also some rules about if they use pesticides, how long time after having sprayed for the last time there need to be before they take them to the market. Because if they take them just after they have sprayed the tomatoes, for example, then the consumers run the risk of getting poisoned. I've seen on the market tomatoes and other vegetables with stains of pesticides on them. And I have asked the dealers and also the consumers, why are you buying pesticide stained food, vegetables? On the one hand, because they don't know what it is, but some of them even said, then we know it's modern agriculture. So they wanted to have some modern products to consume. And that's tells us there's a long way before people are aware of all the dangers of pesticides.
Sonda, what are your experiences related to this from Nepal? And also, I would like to ask you about, I know you have been working a lot with biological pest management, and how can this be used in this reducing of the chemical pesticides?
Yeah, I think Dr. Eric has already give some insight about integrated pest management, and biological control is one of the strategy under the integrated pest management. We are going to integrate all possible methods together or separately so that we can make the pest population below the threshold level, so that we make the crops safe from the pest damage. So we are integrating all methods, whatever available, whatever access to the farmers, we use them. For example, seed selection. If you have a good seed, that seed is going to be germinate very well and it can be very healthy. And the healthy plant is not going to be attacked by insect and disease. If there is no insect and disease, and people and farmers, they are not using chemical pesticide. So similarly, if you have a very good good fertilizer in the soil, for example, potash or some silica, some other things. So if you integrate into the nitrogen, and that crop is very healthy. So because that is integrated pest management, we integrate all methods so that we can reduce the pest population in the farm. So one strategy is, of course, biological control. The nature is full of biological control, but we are wiping out that biological control agent from the nature because of the chemical pesticide. We're using high dose of pesticide. We use a very, very dangerous pesticide. We didn't consider even the dose, even the amount, even the time, even the frequency. So we haven't considered while using the chemical pesticide. So we are killing all beneficial organisms. So we have to, first step, we have to conserve them. If we conserve them in the nature, they have their potentiality to kill the insect in the farm. So first attempt, we have to think about the conservation of those biological control in the nature. That is possible only if we maintain the very good biodiversity. If we have a very good farming practice, like no pesticide, organic farming, something like that. So since few years back, we are working on some biological control agent for focusing on major crop pest in case of the maize, because maize is the second important crop in Nepal. So there is a one pest is called fall armyworm, is coming from the Africa through America through other countries, and we saw that insect in 2019. Since 2019, we are losing our crop about 40 to 50% in the maize by single insect. So we are trying to get the solution for that insect using biological control agent. So there are so many biological control agent in the nature that can be killing the insect. If we grow that biological control insect inside the lab, or if we release them inside, outside in the field when there is a pest problem, then we can get a very good result of killing that insect in the crop. So we protect the maize from that fall armyworm. This is a very big issue of issue of pest in corn. So we are losing the huge amount of corn because of that insect. Though we are trying to introduce, this is a very, very good attempt we are doing in Nepal. This is the first attempt. And we try in the field, the result is very good. When we spray, when we release that biological control agent in the field, then when we compare to the another field where there is no biological control and the release field has a very less damage, release field has a very good yield compared to the no pesticide, no biological control release field. That means this is the so that there is a solution. So we are trying. We have to think about that solution because we haven't keep an eye those solution in the nature. So try to find the solution. Try to find to those biological control which are more better than pesticide, which are more better than other methods of pest management. So if the government, if we including some researcher, if the policy maker focus on those biological control for research, doing even release, giving some subsidy to the farmers, that could be the future pest management strategy without no effect on the chemical, no effect on the environment. So we have to think about the biological control agent that is very successful. And I would also like to recommend, I would also like to think about the global communities to work on the biological control agent as well. Thank you.
Yes, Erik.
Yeah, I have some experience on the biological control, as Sundar tells about as well. In Uganda, I have been in the greenhouses growing roses, and some of them have swapped to biological control, and it has really given a better roses, better plants. They tell me that the plants are becoming older and the roses are growing better if they are not spraying them with the pesticides. So that is what we have also seen in the Nordic countries, that the biological control in greenhouses is a good option because it's a controlled environment, easier to control than on the open field. I have also seen in Bolivia that farmers who really dedicate themselves to traditional methods and biological control can have the same yields as those farmers spraying, and in the long run maintain their soil, so it's a fertile and healthy soil that they grow their crops on. But the issue is how to swap. I mean, the majority of the farmers on the globe are using pesticides. Why? Because if you have to grow cash crop, large fields with the same crop, then it's very difficult to apply biological method. It's also a question about how much work you have to put into the farming. The farmers tell me in Bolivia, Uganda, Nepal that they probably need to put some more effort into farming if they want to grow biologically. Where the work force is not very expensive, that is doable. But for example, in countries like Denmark, where you have big farms, hundreds of acres, it's and with cash crop, it's difficult to hire all the humans that you need, the workforce you need for growing ecological products. But we have seen a movement. We have seen more ecological products coming on the market, and I think that's the way forward. But we need to offer advice systems educations, guidance to the farmers, because many farmers want to grow ecological products, but they can't just see how, and they don't have the knowledge to do it. That's at least what farmers told me. Also in Bolivia, we asked them, and they said this is much, much better for Mother Earth to grow ecologically, and we do it at least for our own consumption, some of them said. So they know that it's better for their own health as well, and also for the consumers. We have tested different food items, and in many cases we have actually found the maximum residue levels of pesticides have been surpassed. The WHO and the ministries of agriculture, they have their maximum level of pesticides permitted on the food products, and in many cases we have found that it has been exceeded, and that means that there is a danger for human health, not only for the farmer spraying but also for the consumers. Nowadays we are talking a lot here in Denmark about residues of pesticides in our drinking water, and in many of the wells, pesticides have poisoned, so to say, the wells, or they have entered the drinking water, and now we are drinking our water, but contaminated with pesticides. Now we have a very low acceptable limit of pesticide in drinking water, so although the amount admitted is passed, it'll probably not do any harm to us. But in other places, where they're drinking from surface water, from the rivers, etc., we also made analysis on that and found that it was exceeded in some places with dangerous levels of pesticides in the drinking water.
Now, Sander, I have two questions to the last bit you mentioned. If you could, I just found maybe it's interesting if you could be very specific when you talked about this biological control in Nepal with the corn. What exactly, I mean, what animal is it? Or some, just if we also imagine some people not knowing so much about this field, maybe we'll be listening this after. And then also I'd like to ask you, when you said this 40-50% of the crops that has been destroyed or affected, what does that mean in terms of food in Nepal or like economically? I mean, it sounds like something really serious. And just like a small, if you also have some comment to what Eric mentioned about this change of mindset. What can we do to make farmers or people change their mind about effective farming or what a correct way of producing the food worldwide?
Yeah, we had a problem of the in that insect, and we lose the big mass, the big amount of the corn when it was introduced in the beginning. So then later, government has immediately taken action to minimize that by giving some subsidy on pesticide, but not a biological control. So it was more than 60% damage in the beginning. We can see that report everywhere, but that data was in 2019, because that pest was introduced in 2019. But after years, 90, 20, 21, that way, the reduction, the pest loss is going to be reduced because of the effort that we made. People are more conscious. You know, there was a big awareness activity from the government. Government give the big priority to the pest management. So the corn is a major crop, because majority of the people in the hilly side, they're using the corn for the as a staple food. So this is going to be affected the food security of the problem, and that is ultimately going to be affected on the malnutrition, right? That way is affected our the economy. And also the maize normally used for the poultry feed. Poultry industry is going to be affected because of that the incidents. So it's going to be affected the food security, also disturb our poultry industry as well. So that way it affected, so that the government make a collaborative effort with the extension worker, university researcher, and some donor organizations, and they collectively enforce, make an effort to minimize that one. And we nowadays, the loss is about 20 to 25%. So in that time, we focus because university got a chances to work on the biological control. We work on that insect, which collected from the nature. This is egg parasitoid. It's a very tiny insect. This is a hymenopteran like a wasp. We grow inside the lab, that wasps, and we produce in the mass scale, in the tube or just in the paper. And whenever necessary, we take the tube and we open the tube and we release inside in the field. And also we just, in the paper, we just cut the paper, we just hang on the leaf when it is necessary. And when it hangs, the parasitoids come outside because of the high temperature. And when they come outside, then it damages the egg of the fall army. If it damages the egg, then we cannot see the larvae, because the larva of the insect, the adult larva, is the damaging stage of the maize of that fall army. So that was targeted on the egg of the fall army. So that way we work. We also work in the another species we call trichogramma. One is trichogramma. Another one is the telenomus. Both are the hymenopteran wasps. It's like a bee, one order, but is a very tiny. It's very difficult to rear, but it's possible if we maintain some artificial food, if we collect the more egg of the other insect, and we grow that parasitoid in other insect, because there is a certain protocol of production of the biological control agent. So this in the initially it is a cost, it takes a more resource and more technical manpower and more money. But when it is established, and when it is see the if when we release in the field, when and then when we see the effect of that biological control, then it could be revive of that initial cost in the 4 or 5 years after. So in long run, biological control is one solution. So I'm sure. So that is things. And of course, the whole overall solution is an integrated pest management. We have to go through the integrated pest management. Biological control methods is just a one part. So we have to think from the beginning, from the crop cultivation to the harvesting. Whenever necessary, first try to find the problem. If there is no problem, we don't have to worry. If there is a problem, we have to think about when the problem comes. We have to monitor the field regularly. Then we have to think about what are the possible pest management strategy we have. And we have to think about that best methods which is going to be affected. Otherwise, we should also think about the economics. We should also think about the social acceptability. So if it is economic, and of course, that can be used by the farmers. So this is some strategy that we have to follow for the success of the IPM program, or some alternative strategy of the pesticide.
Yeah, just to mention, returning to the health issues and the poisoning with pesticides, it's not only the farmers and the consumers that can be affected, but also the unborn child might be affected if the mother have been working with pesticides or been living close to fields where they spray pesticides during pregnancy. Then some of the pesticide can be ingested or inhaled and can pass the placenta barrier to affect the unborn child. Several studies have been made. We made one ourselves in Bolivia, where we found that children who have been exposed to pesticides during pregnancy, they do not perform as well as children without that pesticide exposure during pregnancy. So we also have to think about the future generation when we talk about pesticides and prevention of poisonings. An important issue if we want farmers to reduce the use of pesticide and use pesticides safely when needed. I mean, integrated pest management doesn't say no to pesticides, but they say minimize the use and do only use pesticides if you are in the danger of losing your crop, because many farmers in low-income countries, they cannot afford to lose their crop. Then they will starve and eventually suffer a lot from that. So they have to reach out for the ultimate solution if they can't find another way to combat the pest, or they have a big attack of pest, then they can use pesticides, but they must protect themselves and they must use the pesticide in a proper manner. Now, one problem is that those who sell pesticides, they often do not have any education in pesticide poisoning and how to avoid it, and they don't sell protective gear. So protective measures, personal protective measures, is often unavailable due to economics or due to accessibility in the villages around the world in low-income countries. So they don't have the correct means to protect themselves. And often the prescription or the guide printed on the pesticide bottle is written in a language, for example, English, that the farmers do not necessarily understand. Or the farmers are illiterate, so they can't read, even if the guidance is written in their own language. And that's also a huge problem, talking about safe use of pesticides when it's necessary. And then, of course, we are banning pesticides. We want to ban the most toxic ones. And we have done that in many countries. And it has been demonstrated that if you ban the most toxic pesticides, then the amount of suicides or self-harm cases also is lowered. So it makes sense to ban the most toxic ones, class 1A and 1B, classified by the WHO. They should be banned. And also, to some extent, the class 2 pesticides. It's not necessary. We have alternatives for that.
I would like to ask, this could be any of you who would like to have a comment on this. So I know you have been collaborating for some time, the two of you. And also, Erik, you mentioned the difference between the reality for farming, for instance, in Denmark and in a country like Nepal, or it could be Bolivia or Uganda. Have you two experienced some challenges with this collaboration coming from such different backgrounds or world to say realities or would something you would like to highlight regarding this collaboration?
Yeah, well, I haven't experienced difficulties in collaboration. I mean, we from Denmark, when we help with these issues in low-income countries, we respect local knowledge. And I'm a doctor, not a farmer, so I can't argue against Sunda or other agronomists that we are collaborating with. I mean, I trust them. And I think it's very inspiring to work together and discuss the issues that comes up also regarding how to grow healthy crops without too much use of pesticides. So I haven't seen a problem. We have produced several educational materials together, and we have participated in educational sessions together, and I think it's not a big problem. Due to different mentalities, of course, we have different mentalities, but I haven't experienced problems. I mean, you just have to be listening and don't impose your own ideas too heavily, I would say.
Yeah, even I was working in university and I am teaching to students, but I was not heavily engaged in pesticide related, training, exposure, and etc. So we had a very, very little knowledge when I was belonged to Farming Health and Environment Project. So I got a very good experience when I was even engaging in so many trainings in Nepal, because I myself wanted to learn, and I read many, many papers and many, many, some videos, something like that. And also when I was visited Denmark, I just learned how to spray, and that spray thing is already established in the curriculum. Even I didn't know how to clean the sprayer. We don't know how to, in what way we have to spray. So how to store, how to maintain at least the waiting period. So that was I got from the someone training that is organized by Dialogus in Denmark. So after that, we are happy to collaborate. We included those knowledge things into the university curriculum, and we are enriching our curriculum. Now our students are more familiar about the how to spray, how to clean the sprayer, triple rinsing methods. I never heard, but I heard when I was visited in Denmark. The sprayer and some even container management. We never think about the container management. Just we throw. Even we also teach them to the students. So it's not a big issue of the container, pesticide container issue. But when I was there, I learned how to manage the container, how to clean the container first. So if many things we learned from the Farm Health and Environment Project. So not only that, students that time, three students, they engage in the research supported from Farm Health and Environment Project. From that point, we are more focusing on the minimizing the risks of the pesticide in the farming. It was not a big awareness before, but when that project came in, we organized many, many training. We organized many awareness activities. We developed many, many IEC material, information education and communication materials, and this is still used by the farmers community, even using the university. So in long run, we saw very good impact, very good result. So from that training, so we don't have any. I don't think we have a, because this is a global place. We are just sharing our knowledge. We are just sharing our, the practice what we are doing in the Denmark and Nepal. I think this is a very good opportunity that we had.
What do you think about the importance of this getting together from different professions? Why is that important, or what can you what extra or different way of looking at a problem can you provide in doing that?
Yeah, before it was just the half cup of tea we had, but now the full cup of tea, because we had only how to minimize, how to reduce, but we don't know what could be the risks of that chemical pesticide on human health. So now it is a full cup of tea, because we have a package of practice to reduce, we have a package of practice how to minimize, and what could be the consequences, and how we can be safe. So that is why is a complementary. So we are having now, Dr. Eric is now looks like an IPM specialist. You know, he explained the all package of the IPM cultural, he knows seed selection, you know. So that's why is a kind of complementing each other. We are synergizing each other. So I think that is a very, very good aspect of our collaboration.
Yeah, I think this issue, I mean, it's one of the most problematic toxicological issues, talking about planetary health, because it affects not only humans, not only the sprayer, but also the consumers. It affects us in many parts of the world, because pesticides, especially those, takes a long time to degrade. I mean, in Greenland, you have been able to measure the DDT, one of the pesticides, in the mother's milk, because they are traveling. They are creating problems in other parts of the world, not only where they are used. And that makes interdisciplinary collaboration and working together necessary. Farmers need to know, what are the toxicological properties of pesticides? And that's why they have to use more ecological methods. And that's why they have to protect themselves when they use pesticides. So I think being a planetary health problem, the use of pesticides, is also an interdisciplinary work collaboration that is needed to minimize the problem with pesticides. And many people, many organizations have been working trying to reduce pesticides. But I think it's also very important that governments prohibits the most toxic ones and demands that the farmers are educated, take courses in proper handling of pesticides, because what is happening now, and that's understandable, I mean, the many low-income countries, they want to be able to feed themselves and maybe be able to grow crops that can be exported. But you have to put rules on that. For example, in the EU, we control the food coming from Africa, for example, or other parts of the world, to see if they comply with the maximum residue levels that we have in the EU. And I think it's important with some kind of political strong engagement. And we have the FAO, we have the WHO, they have their guidelines on this. And if only farmers in developing countries or low-income countries could follow these recommendations, we would be in a much better position even today. But it's difficult, because there's also a strong lobby from the industry producing pesticides. And in some cases, I think Sundar mentioned that loans are tied to the use of pesticides, because the loan giver, the bank, wants to reassure himself that the loan is paid back. So they don't want the farmer who take a loan to grow this crop loses the crop. So he say, okay, you can have the loan, but only if you guarantee that you buy this packet of pesticides as well. And I mean, that is somehow an unsafe, unhealthy policy to promote. So political leadership is crucial if we want to reduce the use and amount of pesticides used.
So we are soon getting to the end of our talk. I just have one last question. I'd like to hear what you think, if we just continue business as usual, without making a big or drastic change in this field, what will then happen in 10, 20, 30 years, or what are the risks of this scenario?
If we don't minimize the use of pesticides or increase it, as we see this year is happening in low and middle income countries, then we'll end up with problems like infertile soils, lack of bees to pollinate our plants and grow the crops. We will end up with many more poisonings, especially in low-income countries. So I really think it's time to make a big effort and swap to more ecological farming. Not saying that we totally can avoid the use of pesticides, but at least we can minimize it a lot. Also in Denmark, researchers have said that we can easily, without big problems, reduce the use of pesticides with the 30-40% without hampering the yields. And if we swap and learn properly about ecological methods, then we can even reduce it a lot more.
If we continue the farming practice that way, of course we can face a challenge. We can face a crisis in every area, like a human crisis, like a biodiversity conservation crisis, like an environmental crisis. So we may have that kind of issues in the future if we are not concerning at this moment, because chemical pesticide, even the research says it has getting a big problem of non-communicable disease to the human beings. Is a big issue nowadays. Bees is going to be declining. If it is going to be zero, there will be no production, no even a zero production. That is going to be food security and nutrition security, something like that. And if our environment is polluted, like water pollution, air pollution, then soil pollution, then what happened? Then we cannot get our good future. Our children will be affected. Our future generation will be affected. We will be sick. Our every system, every ecosystem, even the whole ecosystem will be affected by chemical pesticide. That's why there is an alternative. We are not saying we should cut off all pesticide in the beginning. Let's have something, make a strategy reduction from 200 to 80 this year, 80 to 60 next year, 60 to 40 next year. Then, of course, one day will be a green agriculture will come and we will regenerate our farming. That's why we have to think about the regenerative farming, because our farming is already is destroyed by chemical pesticide. Let's think about the regenerative farming. We need to regenerate our farming by improving our farming practice, improving our soil health, improving our biodiversity. Let's have IPM, promote organic farming, many, many things. So the future is a big challenge, but still there is opportunity to work together. We have to think on that way as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any final comments from, and do you have any extra comments you'd like before we end our talk today, any of you?
I think there should be a big message from the farmers to the policymaker. Pesticide is not a medicine. Pesticide is going to be disturb our nature, our health, ecosystem, and also future. Thank you.
Yeah, and maybe let's continue the collaboration. I think by collaborating also on the large distance as we do, and often discussing on the web is also a way forward to share our experiences. So I hope that we'll be able to continue with that, and there'll be some funds for it as well. Thank you.
Thank you so much to both of you for your time and sharing your knowledge and experience. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you,
okay.
Rick.
Okay. Thank you.
Bye.